Chapter 51. The King Arrives in Barobel. The news that King Rard was personally leading 30,000 troops from the southern fiefs up the river, and was actually moving, not merely a rumour, was galvanising to the city, and after our day-long victory celebration, the folk of Barobel went to work to prepare their gracious city for its first royal visit. I was busy preparing for a departure, hiring my own barges to begin the process of transporting my Bovali back to Sevendor, beginning with the wounded. I saw the first load of the most serious off before Rard arrived, and sent Rondal along with them as their steward. The boy was a passable field medic now, and he had a level head when it came to such things. Tyndall would go with the next group, and then I would return with the Hale Sevendori and the other Riverlands warriors I'd brought. In the meantime, I took a day or so to explore the city and enjoy what fruits of its civilization remained. I met with local spellmongers and hedge magi, had lunch with a trio of foot wizards near the eastern gate, and toured a few of the temple libraries the city is famed for. I made a lot of spur-of-the-moment purchases of things I thought Alia and our people back home would enjoy, some at incredibly good prices. War has a way of creating bargains like it does graves. By the time Rard's royal barge did arrive, I was packed up and ready to move. My Sevendori levies were either departing or awaiting more barges, and my luggage and new purchases had already been sent upriver. Rard arrived with great fanfare, although, I was pleased to note, not nearly the same enthusiasm as the Dragon Slayer and the Hawkmaid had been, and there was the mandatory reception following his disembarking. His troops were deployed almost at once to help support the screening effort north of the city, but Rard felt compelled to linger and meet with his advisers. Like, for instance, me. I was gratified that I was among the very first he summoned to his royal chamber, which the day before had been styled one of the city's wealthier burghers' homes. He was seated on a balcony overlooking the western road, the river in the distance, and a flurry of pages and messengers was constantly coming and going around him. He had no less than three functionaries dealing with such issues, as well as a gargantuan knight with a greatsword, standing behind him in full armour. Penny and I had both been summoned, sorry, requested, by Rard, so at least I wasn't facing the lion alone. "Your Majesty," I said, as I bowed deeply to the man who was king. Rard looked older and more worn than he had at his radiant coronation. There were pits under his eyes, and despite his fine clothes and meticulously groomed blonde hair, he looked troubled and tired. "Mage Lord," he said evenly in return, "I heard of your glorious victory while we were still downriver. Congratulations are in order." "I did but what you tasked me with, Majesty," I pointed out. "You wanted a dead dragon. I killed one. They can be killed. And that is a relief to many in Gilmora and beyond," he admitted, "and yet it is said that it took nearly all of your order to do so." "It was our first dragon slaying," I pointed out. "We're still learning." "Understood," he said after a moment's pause. "But it would be ideal if there was a way to ensure they were no longer a threat at all. Pray continue your studies. I've had audience after audience of riverlords who tremble at the very idea of a dragon." "They have every right to," I agreed. "As your Majesty will see when you ride through the ruins of Cambrian Castle, a dragon is a thing justly feared. Our Alcan allies tell us that these are but hatchlings yet. They will grow larger and smarter. Our only solace is that the same resistance to spellcraft they demonstrate to us also foils the dead god's control over them. They are a difficult weapon to wield, Majesty." "That, at least, is good news," he agreed gravely. "But that does bring us to our allies, as you call them, the Alca Alan. Why have they chosen you to host their embassy with the kingdom when the capital is elsewhere?"
"Because their embassy is not with the kingdom, Majesty," Pentandra said respectfully. "It is with humanity. The Alca chose Sevendor for their own reasons. They will not be bound by human custom. If they wish to speak to us in Sevendor, then I counsel your Majesty to accept their proposal and their alliance, for Barobel would have been lost without their aid."
"Still, it is unseemly," he said, shaking his uneasy head. But I suppose one could go mad, trying to compel the tree folk to do anything they don't want to. Very well. I suppose I will have to accept their embassy and their help when and where I can get it. But I am wary of such mystery, Mage Lord. As are we, Majesty, I agreed, but until we know more. Now you have slain a dragon for me, he sighed. There will be a reward, of course, 1,000 ounces of gold or something appropriate, but now I have more important work for you to do. More important than dragon slaying? I asked in disbelief. To what task does His Majesty do us the honor of proposing? Pentandra asked diplomatically. Simple. I have a rebellion on my hands. When news of my coronation reached the coastal fiefs of Alshar, suddenly 3 Alshari counts rose in rebellion and called into question the death of Duke Lengwin at Timberwatch. Since I knew for a fact that Rad, or more accurately, his wife's pet assassins, had indeed killed Lengwin in the Wilderlands, the irony of that was potent. They've responded to my royal messengers by posting mercenaries at their frontiers. They deny my legitimacy, but they have 50 or 60,000 mercenary troops and followers to enforce that denial. That's a thorny problem, I agreed, but what can we do about it? I need you to use your influence, and perhaps even your magical powers, to bring this rebellion to heel, he said reasonably. Locate and eliminate the leaders. Discover who is funding them, and shut down the opposition. It's bad enough the Gathani have chewed up a quarter of my realm, to see another portion taken by rebellion. That is a thorny problem, I repeated. I regret we cannot assist with that. What? Asked the king sharply.
Your Majesty, Pentandra said with only slightly exaggerated patience, if you recall, under the royal charter you yourself signed but a few months ago, the arcane orders can only be summoned to defend the kingdom against existential and external threats to the realm. Threats like the dead god and the Gavani, not the political troubles within your borders.
King Rad didn't look happy about that. You refuse?
We must, I insisted, having heard this lecture from Penny often enough in private to recite it almost word for word. Majesty, if the arcane orders can be called upon to settle matters on behalf of the king, then we either become your unwilling weapon, or we turn on you or each other as the vagaries of feudal politics pit us against each other. That is why we were so careful about how we wrote the charter you signed. Magic must remain separate from politics, or at least not be a tool of political power, lest we begin to resemble the magocracy in unflattering ways. Either the Magi will eventually seize power for themselves, which would be unthinkable, or the throne would begin dictating policy and procedure to the arcane orders, and that would effectively do the same. Instead, we took great pains to establish ourselves so as to be alluring neither as a threat to be vanquished or a tool to be used. You may call upon us to defend the kingdom, but not to defend the crown. If we start taking sides in politics beyond our own, we run a danger for ourselves and the kingdom. Yet here I am faced with a threat as clear as that of the dead god, he said testily. 3 counts, comprising nearly 100 domains, have rejected fealty to me or Lengwin's son, claiming he's my puppet. This proved the rebellious counts were good observers, if nothing else. That would be a minor matter if they had not spent so much time and treasure fortifying and preparing for this day, he continued. Now I would have to lead almost twice as large an army as I brought with me to reconquer those provinces. Or I could get my spellmonger to do it for me, he finished, and looked at me intently. I wasn't willing to be intimidated. I can pay respect to his pointy hat, but I knew that underneath that warrior king persona, Rad was a schemer and plotter of the highest order. Your Majesty, even if I could do it under the charter, I complained, that is hardly my area of expertise. Indeed, you might find a better candidate for that even closer at hand, I said, a subtle reminder that his intelligence network was well versed in such skills as subterfuge, bribery, assassination, and revolution. I am investigating all of my resources, he said dryly.
but I cannot let this rebellion stand. Unfortunately, these counts are well established, have deep pockets, and are in a very defensible position. Where arms cannot prevail, magic may suffice.
Diplomacy may suffice even more,
Pentandra suggested.
Just what are the objections these lords make to your majesty's rule?
They are mere justifications, he dismissed. They cite tradition, ancient law, custom, treaty. But it is all merely a rationalization of their rebellion. They seek to run their fiefs without paying tribute, without contributing to the army, without enforcing my edicts, he said, as if that was the most barbarous thing he'd ever heard. Meanwhile, we keep the dead god from their doorstep.
Ignore them, then, sire, I proposed, for now, at least.
But are they not a threat to the realm? He pointed out patiently. Do you not have an obligation under the charter?
The rebellious counts are not attempting to overthrow Castelshar,
Pentandra pointed out. They merely do not wish to be a part of it. That is not the same as fighting aggressively against it. They don't want your head, Majesty. They do not even want your crown. They just do not want to be subject to it.
That is unacceptable, he demanded.
That is not my problem, I said, boldly and flatly. I gave you a pretext upon which to base your throne, Majesty. I did not guarantee that the land would rejoice in your ascension. In fact, I'm surprised there hasn't been more resistance. But what there is, you must deal with. Call us if there are goblins or dragons, but truculent counts fall under mundane affairs, not arcane affairs.
This does not please me, Spellmonger,
Rad said sternly. That voice had power. It was used to being obeyed to the letter. Pleasing you was not my goal, Majesty, I shot back. In fact, preservation of the duchies against the dead god was my goal. The people of the duchies, not their rulers. If you and these counts want to squabble, then do so, but without magic.
Damn it, Minolan,
he said, slamming his fist against the table hard. I need you to pacify these counts and bring them in line.
Damn it, Rad,
I swore back. I need time and energy and resources just to plan the decades of war that are ahead of us, and chasing down your personal squabbles is just not high on my priorities right now. There was a bit of a tense moment, until both of us eased down. I expected Penny to roll her eyes, but she has outstanding decorum. Instead, she addressed us both, calmly and rationally.
Majesty? Mage Lord? While I have not studied the matter of the Alshari counts in depth, the political situation seems clear enough. These counts may not hold you as their liege, but neither are they prepared to invade those who have sworn fealty to the crown. Therefore, if they are not going to obstruct you, spending time on dealing with them while the kingdom is in crisis is not wise, Majesty. Neither is allowing the political entity upon which your position is based to suffer such rebellion a wise move, Mage Lord. While our charter does specifically forbid acting as an agent of the crown against political threats, which was included for very good reason, Majesty, that does not preclude our involvement in matters of grave concern to the crown. Indeed, your position at the royal court is predicated on that, she pointed out.
Damn it, Penny. I thought you were on our side,
I sent to her hastily, mind to mind. She didn't respond non-verbally.
To that end,
she continued, ignoring my pleas, I propose that the arcane orders agree to quietly cooperate with such matters. As long as our involvement does not become public knowledge, then I think we can lend assistance clandestinely.
Penny, that flies in the face of everything.
I said cooperate, not lead a full-scale assault, she pointed out.
These counts are not going to be beaten on the battlefield, not if they are strong and entrenched. They must be beaten from within. It may take a few years, but if we help the process, then they can be brought to heel slowly, over time.
I don't have that kind of time,
Rad insisted. If the Alshari counts can rebel, then what is to stop the counts of Wenshar from doing likewise?
The willingness of Merwin to invade them if they do,
Penny pointed out. Wenshar alone could not resist that. Wenshar as part of Castelshar most decidedly could.
Leaving these Al-Shari counts in rebellion does nothing to harm you, Majesty, save bruise your pride and diminish your coffers. Let them pretend to independence for a while. See who joins them. Then, as you have infiltrated and scried their strengths, you can take a moment to turn from the war with the Gavani to strike.
It sounded reasonable, but I wasn't feeling very reasonable. Penny, that's as good as going there and slitting some throats myself. If we involve the Order in this,
then we demonstrate that we are a power to be reckoned with, and no one will screw with us,
she taunted. His Majesty is right about a few things here. If these counts can successfully rebel so easily, it's a sign of weakness, not just for Rad, but for us, too. It's as good as admitting that we can't do anything about it, not because we don't want to, but because we can't. So we don't. We let them rebel. And then we allow every politically disaffected exile across the lands drift into their sphere of influence. Before long, Merwin will see an opportunity to cultivate an ally right on our doorstep, and they will start sending money to support their resistance. Conversely, it's possible the Gavani will strike out for the coastal cities, in which case, I think we can count on the Counts being willing to change their song. They might be well defended and well armed, but they cannot stand up to the Gavani by themselves. When a year or two has passed, then you put the structure and people in place to strike. Create enough chaos and trouble for the people, and they will be clamoring to be part of the kingdom. But until then, you conserve your strength, make some idle threats, and wait for the Counts to let their guard down before you strike. You infiltrate, learn, and then, when the time is right, you can conquer and confiscate any of the estates of the rebels for the crown, and then commute their executions to lifetimes of service in the war, bearing the Iron Ring.
That makes uncommon good sense, Penny, I agreed, after thinking about it for a while.
Gods, her mind had more gears than a millworks. Rad seemed to agree too, but his royal dignity wouldn't let him admit it. And in the meantime, what shall I do about the estates I run already within their territory? He asked. There are some 20 that were the property of the Al-Shari coronet. A few of the duchy's appointed stewards have joined the rebels, but most have stayed loyal to Lenguin, who's dead. As I rule Al-Shari lands through his son, one would think that the transfer of oaths would be obvious. But we are dealing with insidious people. They refuse to swear fealty. They refuse to acknowledge the crown. But they must be managed. Yet I loathe to send a good man there with the knowledge that he will be subject to assassination, bribery, scandal, and even domain war if he stands for me. What man of honor would accept such a commission? And who could maintain the discipline to stand against those who saw him as a representative of the crown?
Then don't send a good man, Majesty, Pentandra urged. Indeed, I would counsel that a good man isn't necessarily your best advocate in that circumstance. A wicked man, who would attract the sort of folk who could help you topple the Counts, would likely be better suited. And if he turns traitor on you, you can always hang him later.
Perhaps, he said, pursing his lips in thought. It was an almost girlish gesture in such a masculine man. Perhaps a righteous advocate is not what I need. I know some of the Arch-Magi would appoint their political opponents to dismal positions and then punish them later on for oppressing their own people. If the right man is chosen for the job, then he may serve my purposes and yet not become so cozy with the local lords that he turn his coat, or so inspires the loyalty of his vassals in trust that he becomes a rebel in his own right. I suppose what I need, if I am not to go to war against them, is an ironclad son of a bitch, smart enough to run the estates, but too stupid to use them against me.
Your Majesty, I said, snapping my fingers, I think I know just the son of a bitch.
For all of the friction with Rad, the king was actually pretty pleased with the arcane orders for keeping his lucrative fief of Barrowbell from falling to the Gavani. Once you got beyond politics, Rad was actually a decent guy, away from his wife. That wasn't to say his wife's representatives weren't always around him, and twice they tried to attract my attention with various code words. I didn't bite. I was too tired to play palace politics. But with Rad's arrival, as well as the southern troops he'd raised, Our work was essentially done in Gilmora, and as much as it would have been helpful for the Alca'alon to transport us back home, that was magically just not feasible. We had to go the hard way, upriver on a leaky barge. I was more than ready. The near constant drizzle of the season contained a cold hint of the season to come. Winter was coming, and autumn was full upon us. As pretty as Barrow Bell and the surrounding countryside was, I was missing home something fierce. So was Sire Kay, who had had his fill of being everyone's hero. He missed his new bride and his stepdaughter, too. The other Bovali men who had bravely accompanied me into danger and dragonfire deserved a long, safe winter with full bellies, warm beds, and no worries. The last part, at least, I could help with. Rad had grudgingly admitted that I had used my powers as marshal in an approved manner, and had therefore approved my requisition from the Royal Treasury to pay them. Every infantryman, no matter how common, would return to the Riverlands with 20 newly minted 1-ounce silver stags, bearing the antlers and anchor seal of Alshar in his pocket. Every common-born cavalryman or common mage received 50 stags, more than twice the mercenary rate, and every noble-born cavalryman or registered war mage got a purse with 20 stags and a brand-new 1-ounce gold coin, called a rose, for the flower on the obverse. That was a rich reward even for such meritorious service. There was more. On my recommendation, little Dara was ennobled by Rad, and given 100 roses for her part in the killing of the dragon, and Sire Kay, the dragon slayer, was given a magnificent black charger, the colour of the inside of night, a new set of armour, and 1,000 gold roses for his service. Far more than he needed to restore his tiny estate, and that was in addition to the gifts heaped upon him by a grateful populace. But the day when we finally embarked on our own barge and said goodbye to Barrow Bell couldn't come fast enough. I was homesick. Pentandra didn't come with us. She was quitting Barrow Bell a few days later, and would return to Castabriel to continue to work on the Order's organization through the winter. Planus would accompany her, as would several other newly made High Magi. With both the attrition from the battle and the capture of 6 new stones altogether, I had over 12 new High Magi to make and, thankfully, plenty of good candidates for them. The Remerans would help them acclimatize to their stones, as well as train them in their use, back at the temple. The other Magi were busy too. Sarakim was still happily hunting Gervani all over Gilmora, along with the Order's other war Magi. Baron Arathaniel had agreed to stay 1 more month with his men, at a highly lucrative rate, and help with the defenses. Lady Ithalia just disappeared one day. I had a feeling we'd be seeing her again. So it was just me and my 3 apprentices who were heading home with Sire Kay and the other 7 Dori. I didn't mind. These were my mates, my comrades, my extended family, and they were some of the few people I felt I could be my casual self around. "Just wait until he starts teaching you," Tyndall was saying to Dara in the stern of the barge that first afternoon. "At first it seems like an awful lot of fun, and then it is work, and then it's just bloody tedious," he complained. "But once you start picking it up..." "Don't let him scare you," dismissed Rondol with a wave. "Master Min is a cream puff. You should have met my first master. He works for the dead god now." "The hard parts will be learning to concentrate on everything at once," Tyndall continued, ignoring his brother apprentice. "Then remembering all of those bloody correspondences, the charts, the sigils, blah! The mysteries of the universe, in his hands, and he's frustrated," Rondol said, shaking his head. "Idiot. So what kind of magic are you most interested in, Dara?" Her hawk chose that moment to fall out of the sky and slapped the water with its talons before returning to its mistress with a healthy 2-pound fish.
"I don't know. I was thinking of something with animals," she said casually. "Am I going to have to learn war magic?" she asked.
"Are you sure you have the energy for a 3rd apprentice, Mage Lord?" Sire Kay asked me, as we overheard the young people talking. "I don't think I have enough for the first 2, I acknowledged, "but she needs to be trained. She's 7 Dori, and I want some native 7 Dori who can defend her at need. As you can see, my current position is going to take me on the road, frequently,
and you will be spending all your time tending your beehives, I smirked, thinking of Lady Estret. Still, he cautioned, there are those who feel you are unfairly putting her in front of worthier candidates. I am not a mage, but I have ears. There are already mutterings. There always will be. I'm learning that a good part of being a good mage lord is ignoring them and doing what you think is right anyway. Besides, I think my other two apprentices are going to be out of my hair for a while, so I'll have time to devote to her instruction. Indeed, I would see it a boon if you would volunteer to teach her to read this winter. It would be an honour, mage lord. He nodded. There was a long, quiet moment between us then, as the apprentices chattered away. The bargemen were poling their way along the river, and the sun was settling beautifully over the receding city of Barrowbell. We puffed our pipes and enjoyed the quiet, until Kay chose to break it. Mage lord, I would like to take the opportunity to express my gratitude, he said lightly, and to make an admission. I was wrong about you. That startled me, coming from Sire Kay. I beg your pardon? When I first accepted your offer of employment, he explained, I did so figuring it would be a temporary assignment. You and I had a poor history of relations until then. I thought you young, foolish, and wealthy enough, perhaps, to give me time to find a better situation. I did not think you had the heart to be a lord and run your estate, and I vowed to do so honorably until I could find a way to abandon you with a clear conscience. Then I watched what you did, for me and for the other Bavale. You created a home for us, gave us succor when we should have, by all rights, been refugees. You did not need to do that. You did not need to invest so liberally. Indeed, I felt you a fool for spending so lavishly, and I counted it as proof that you would spend yourself into penury. But I erred. He admitted, you have proven a wise and adept ruler, which I never would have suspected. You have shown compassion and mercy when you did not need to, and bladdened iron where you did. I took you for a merchant pretending to play at being a noble. What you showed me was the heart of true nobility, leading the people you are charged with protecting with the thoughtfulness of a father over his children. You give me too much credit, I protested, laughing. Kay, I've been making this up as I go along. There are no ideals, I proclaim. There are no schemes in my head save this one, to make a happy home where my happy family can live among friends, until the day the dead god comes to my gate, and by then I hope to be able to deal with him. I dare say he should be worried, chuckled Sayake. You took your greatest enemy, and not only defeated him and took his lands, you rewarded him to the point where he thanked you publicly with tears in his eyes in front of the king. I do hope the Alshari counts enjoy the taste of warbird, I said with a little more relish than I had intended. As Rad's designated representative, he's going to get a lot of attention from his new neighbours, including poison and rat tails, I'd wager. Not really the reward for his good service he expects, but he can wear the sash of the King's Steward proudly until he is poisoned or stabbed. If Gimble plots and plans the way I suspect he will, it won't be long before he's eliminated. That man has a way of making enemies everywhere. One of the reasons I recommended him to Rad for the job. Perhaps he will do as well as his friend Erenthal did with Sevendor, Kay agreed. Speaking of which, I ache to see it again. I once thought I could never love a land more than the wilds of the Mindens, but perhaps it is the sweat and toil we've invested that we miss. No, it is our ladies we miss, as much as the soil and the scenery, I sighed. But for that, at least I have a remedy. I took a pouch out and handed it to him. The magical mirror of Sevendor, I reminded him. Use it and summon your bride to speak to you before you arrive, to let her know the good news. I had already alerted Bannermore myself, so the news of the Sevendori casualties and the day of our arrival was well known. But nothing beats hearing it from your warrior's own lips. Just don't be too long. I want to speak to Alia before she's crippled with morning sickness again.